Thank you. This is the December 14th, 2022 meeting of the Water Resources and Watershed Committee of the Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency Board of Directors. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or the Zoom webinar link. In the event there's a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or an internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without the remote participation. Remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in the public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click on the raise hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. For members of the public present, there are comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to UNI to help expedite public comments. Procedures for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present the item. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move the item to the board for consideration. We will consider putting items on consent if possible. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. At this time, all of the members of the committee are present except for Director Gutzeit, who we're expecting shortly. With that, I'll start the meeting. Item number one is Pledge of Allegiance. Director Armitage, would you do the honors tonight?
Rise, place your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We can now move on to item two, which is public comments for items related to the committee, but not necessarily on tonight's agenda. Any comments?
There's no comment.
Very good. And with that, let's move on to item number three, which is to recommend the adoption of a resolution authorizing the general manager to submit an application for Proposition 1, Round 2 Integrated Regional Water Management Implementation Grant and execute a grant agreement with the California Department of Resources to be presented by Rick Vassilopoulos. So, Rick, if you're ready.
I am, Director Ford. Thank you for reading that rather long title. For a board memo. So you should all have received a memo explaining the grant funding opportunity that we have for two Santa Clarita Valley water projects, as well as two projects, one for the city and one for the county, as part of the IRWIN Prop 1 Round 2 Implementation Grant. Our Upper Santa Clara region will be asking for just under $10 million of grant funding for the four projects. About $3.3 million of it would be for Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency projects. The memo also includes a brief description of these projects. The cost for applying for the grant will be split between SCV Water and the city and the county, where we'll be paying half of it, and the other half will be split between the city and county, seeing that we have two projects and they have one project each. And then this cost was included in our water resources 2022 operating budget. If we receive the grant, the Sand Canyon Sewer Replacement Project cost will be requested to be put in the 2024 or 2023 fiscal year budget and would get funded through customer contributions and a portion of the 1% property tax. And the more expensive TNU well project would be financed with debt funding. The grant application is due on February 1st, and with your approval, the item will go to January 3rd board meeting for resolution adoption, of which we would like to recommend that the item be placed on the consent calendar. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Ruth. We'll make a general announcement in the record that Director Kutsite arrived moments ago. And with that, we'll see if there are any comments from members of the public on item number 3. Thank you, Uni. So are there questions of staff or members of the committee on this item? Director Cooper.
Yes. The Hasley Canyon one. For some reason, that's one that I don't recall. And who are we? Are we partnering? That's because that's in the county. Are we partnering with the county on that, or is this just going to be our project?
It's actually their project. So we're partnering just for the grant itself. They're doing their project on their own. The city is doing their project on their own, and then we have our two projects. But so this is just a combination of our group. Our regional management group for the Upper Santa Clara to get together. So we're the people that are going to be processing the grant.
Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions, members of the committee? Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for explaining how the costs will be shared. That was really helpful, and I appreciated that. Thank you also for the detailed description of the four projects in the memo. Couple of questions. So you mentioned that some of these are, so for instance, the Hasley Canyon project is the county's project. The Via Princesa one is the city's project, right?
Correct.
We're applying together for the funds, but will there be collaboration at some point on those other two projects with us?
As for the construction of the projects themselves or the benefits of the projects?
I guess the benefits of the project is what I'm looking for. Because, I mean, ultimately, we will benefit from it, right?
They're both projects that are, helping to recharge the basin. So in that respect, we'll benefit from that. I don't believe we talked to the county about doing any attachments or any kind or with our systems, but we did talk to the city about somehow tying into their Via Princesa project. It just working with operations, it didn't seem right now that it could work, but it may work in the future where we may be able to put extra water into their holding area, but right now we don't have the infrastructure to make that work. So but it is a possibility in the future.
Okay. I mean, because I would love to see talk about collaboration in the future with them, because these are, I think, the types of projects I'd like to see us benefiting from more and more, like the regional projects that are going to bring us regional water and less reliance on imported water. So I guess I'm saying that I'm excited to see this, and I would absolutely encourage as much collaboration as possible in the future on these types of projects. So thank you for that. And then lastly, my last question is related to the Sand Canyon sewer line relocation. I just need a little help digging into my memory. Was this the project that the developer that we ended up giving a community facilities district, is this the same project?
This is a different project. I can take this one.
Okay. Which different project?
Okay.
So this is a different project. Okay. So the what's left of the sewer is the one that you're recollecting, which is the sewer lift station. And then there's a force main associated with that. That means it's not a gravity main. It's the part that the pump station forces the fluids through until it hits a gravity section. So that's the piece that the developer is funding and going to be replacing. There's a smaller section that is remaining right by the Vista Canyon development. So basically call it the in and out Sand Canyon, in and out the gas station, Denny's, there's a little mobile home park there. That little section still remains. And so this project is to address that section.
Okay. And why didn't they Why didn't they pick up? Why is it two separate things?
The developer's sewage does not flow through that section. So that is a separate section that has different users on it. It didn't seem appropriate to make a developer fund a portion that was not going to have their sewage flows within it.
I feel like it was sold to us as like, they're going to take the last sewage project off our hands and we'll never have to deal with it again. So that's why I was asking, well, wait a minute, why is this coming up again? So,
well, we'll definitely take that in consideration when we present the sewer anytime that we do, because we've tried to show it that way and communicate it that way, but if it didn't come across that way, then that's something that we're going to need to improve upon.
Okay. Okay. That was it. Thank you.
Yep. Other questions from the committee? Greg, I was going to ask you, what is the cost, the estimated capital cost of the project for the sewer line relocation? Do you happen to recall?
We're getting over 50% through the grant, so it was around $3.5 million.
Okay.
And I'm going to put a major caveat on that. As the staff report says, there will be a new cost assessment done for that sewer project when final design is done. The cost escalation has changed the world right now. And so I would suspect that project would see a lot of those same impacts as we get, you know, more detailed planning done for it.
That seems pretty realistic. But we are providing the majority of the matching funding in the grant request. The agency will be. Just three entities on the IRWM group wanted projects, so everybody else is content to not have a project in the suite this go around.
Yep. We had our bunch of our stakeholder meetings, and just nobody stepped up to the plate and wanted to do any or add a project that was ready to go.
Well, it certainly makes our grant administration chore easier to just have the four projects and two of them from outside agencies. So,
yeah.
And then the last thing I think I wanted to say is I wanted to commend you on getting a 25% share for this region. We used to fight with Greater LA and it was like pulling teeth, but on a per capita basis, you've done the best of the three regions. So well done on that division.
Thanks.
The grant funding. That's great. Helps our ratepayers out a lot, this project. So with that, I'm okay with consent.
I'm okay.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and place the item on consent. And thank you, Rick. And we'll.
Is the sewer line going to go up in the bike trail? Is that where it's going?
It doesn't go as far as the bike trail. I think it's still on the river side of it, I believe.
Okay.
I haven't seen the final design of the layout yet, but I believe it's on the inside, somewhere between the bike trail and the river itself.
The bike trail alignment where it ends, terminates currently at Vista Canyon, kind of where the bridge is going to go up and over. There are plans with the city to continue that trail over Mitchell Hill and then up to the Sand Canyon location. So the previous discussions that we've had with the city was to, yes, work with them in the alignment of the sewer in the ultimate bike trail that is going to be there. There's a little piece on Mitchell Hill that is going to require most likely a bore to get through the corner of the project.
Okay. Thanks again, Rick.
Good. Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night. Good night.
Thanks, Rick.
And then we can move on to item 4.1, which is the status of water supplies to be presented by Sarah Flory. Sarah, if you're ready.
Hey, Sarah, we don't have audio for you. Is that better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, phew. I don't need that. My computer's on the verge of dying, so I'm hoping it lasts through the end of the week. Second. I was afraid to update it before the meeting, too. Okay, how's that?
You're good.
I just need my screen back real quick. Okay, thank you for your patience with my technical difficulties. Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to be doing kind of the normal status of water supply update. We're going to go through drought classification, precipitation forecast, snowpack, quick reservoir conditions, and then dive into our kind of finishing off our 2022 operations and 2023 operations. And I put a fun picture of my mom's snow angel here from their trip to Mammoth a couple weeks ago, hoping that that snow continues. But so starting off with drought classifications, I thought it would be helpful to kind of, you know, we're starting a new water year, kind of look at where we've been and how this drought started. So I have four drought classification maps here, and they show us where we started each water year. So can you guys see my, oh, here you go. Okay. I have water year 2020. This is kind of where the drought started. And at the beginning of the water year, you know, there was really zero drought classification, except for a little bit here in the southeastern region of the state. But it got dry and very quickly, and more so this water year in the northern part of the state. So by the time we got through this water year 2020, and we went into 2021, this is where we ended up, the second graph here moving up. And you can see that Northern California was hit pretty hard and the drought came on pretty fast. LA County is down here, so we were still faring pretty good at that time. Moving into water year 2022, I'm sorry, 2021. 2021 was one of the driest years on record. So we started out not so great, and we ended up with an extremely dry year. And so at the end of that water year, this is where we landed. And you can see that a majority of the state was seeing exceptional drought conditions. Within 1 year, LA County basically went from barely any drought classification to now D3 and D4 classifications down here. So this is basically where we started the current water year 2022. So we were in a pretty bad place. Moving into 2022 water year, which we just finished up, you know, we didn't do too bad statewide. We had quite a bit of precipitation in December, but what also happened was it got very dry January through March and April. It was the driest conditions they've seen. So though we started out well, it dried up very quickly, but overall we had about 76%, I would say an average, you know, a little below average year statewide. And so this last graphic here is where we started this current 2023 water year that we're just entering now. And so you can see that by getting a just below average water year throughout the state, we did see some improvements. Definitely improvements in Northern California area, but Central Valley is still not in a good place. And so this is kind of where we started this water year, and we'll go from there. Definitely moving into the fourth year of drought though. So I wanted to start off by talking about precipitation percent of average so far for this water year to date. I pulled this information just this morning. And so statewide, you can see we're not doing too bad. The purples and the blues mean a high, much above their normal precipitation for this time of year. So if you recall in the last graphic, the Central Valley was the one that was seeing those D4 drought classifications still. And now the Central Valley is looking like it's getting hit pretty hard at the beginning of this water year, which is great. So we're seeing purples above 200% of average precipitation. Our area is faring pretty well. It looks like, you know, we're in the blues. We're a little bit above average for this time of year, but Northern California is still a little bit behind. And so, you know, overall, going into the fourth year of drought, we need to recognize that we are still probably at least 1 year's worth of precipitation behind where we should be with three cumulatively dry years. So though we're getting a lot of precipitation and we're currently at 106% of our average for the year, so we can see here we're just a little bit above our average, we have a ways to go. And we did start out last year kind of in a similar manner with quite a bit of precipitation, and then it just stopped. So it's good news, but I'm not holding my breath yet. Moving to SCV historical rainfall, this is a graphic I've showed a lot. We've got our wettest year in blue. We've got our average year in green. Last year, you can see we landed just below average in orange. And then our driest year, which was that 2021 water year, in red. And then yellow is where we are currently with regards to our precipitation for this water year. And what is looking good for us this year is that it's been a couple years since we've had any precipitation in October and November. Last year, we really didn't have any precipitation until we got that huge amount here in December. So it was just flatlined. And then we got 10 inches in a week or so around Christmas. And then it just kind of stopped. So this nice mellow rise is good. And we actually have over, we've met our monthly precipitation averages so far to date, I believe, and we've already met our average for December. So anything above what we have currently is going to be a bonus for this month. I pulled the 6-day forecast in the presentation I made about a week ago when I was preparing this, and it looked a lot more exciting because we had all that rain. But looks for the next 6 days, it's going to be pretty dry, not showing too much coming in. But precipitation outlook, basically, we're still seeing about a 76% chance of La Nina from December through February. As you recall, La Nina conditions generally mean drier conditions for us in the southern areas. So that's kind of what this graphic here, our precipitation outlook for January through March is showing us that, you know, there's a probability of below normal precipitation in the southern area, equal chances of above or below in the Northern California area, and then all those storms are going to get pushed up north. I was just on another meeting today, and it looks like this information here, this 57% chance of transitioning to enzo neutral, actually up to 71% now, which is good. So basically, if we can shift out of La Nina, that means that we have a better chance, kind of a 50-50 chance of storms having a better opportunity to get to us. Not a guarantee, but at least it's a better chance than La Nina conditions. So we're hoping that sometime between February and April, when we do tend to get quite a bit of precipitation still, we'll start seeing some of those storms coming through and hitting us again. That's the hope. With regards to December's outlook, you can see we've already been hit with a lot more precipitation than expected, even in the southern area, which had equal chances in their forecast. No conditions. So we're starting the snow year out kind of like we did last year. Except for there's one difference, it's a lot colder than it was last year. So when we got all that precipitation last year in December, a lot of it fell as rain. And so what's different now is that it's really cold out and we're getting a good start to that snowpack. And so you can see down here, we are about 42% of our peak in April of where we want to be. We are completely outside of the normal bell curve, so we've got more snowpack than we normally should have at this time of year. And you can see that in these numbers here on the map. And so you've got two percentages, the percent of the April 1st average, and then the percent of normal for this time of year. And in the northern, central, and southern Sierras, we're above 200% for this time of year. So again, it's just the beginning of the year. I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but it's definitely a decent start for snowpack. And snowpack turns into runoff. So we like to see that snowpack. Reservoir conditions. So reservoir conditions are still pretty low. Our major reservoirs are, you know, on average about 67% of what they should be for this time of year. A lot of the big ones, Lake Shasta, which is up here, is extremely low. San Luis is pretty low as well. Orville is doing okay. It's better than it was previously, but it's still pretty low. So we do have a ways to go with regards to our reservoirs. And that's kind of where you go back to that. It's going to take more than one good above average year to get us back out of this drought. One good thing, though, is that just from the storms that we had last weekend, they were saying they were going to see anywhere from like 30,000 to 60,000 acre feet of runoff into Lake Oroville. So it could raise the reservoir anywhere from 4 to 8 feet just from one weekend of storms. So that's great. And then one other thing that they had mentioned was that these early storms that we had in October and November, what they haven't seen in the last couple of years is that the hydrology is actually showing up as runoff. And so the previous years, it would rain, but a lot of that rain would just go back into the ground. So now we're seeing that with those early rains, it saturated the ground and it's actually getting to the reservoirs. So again, another highlight of things so far this year. So next I wanted to go into our 2022 operations. And, you know, I was thinking about the last couple of years and we've actually had very similar graphics. This shows us our actual demands in the bar graphs. And then you've got our estimated demand, our monthly demand in this dotted line. And the last couple of years since 2020 are this has basically looked the same. And what you see is a lot of colors, and a lot of colors means that we're pulling a lot of water from all of our different supplies to help meet demands. One thing that is different this year, though, is that there's a gap. And so this gap that we're seeing here between the bars and the dotted line represents all the conservation work that our customers have been doing and how we've been able to save dry your water supplies by not having to fill those gaps in with additional demand. So that's a huge highlight. I believe that we went to tier two in, I believe it was April of last year. So right about here. And you can see pretty quickly within a couple months, we started seeing the benefits of those programs and increasing conservation efforts. So as far as all the colors, you know, our supplies there, it's great to be able to have all those different supplies to utilize to meet demands. And it's been a little bit crazy with that, but we have them and they're benefiting us. And the conservation is also helping us reduce that demand. So everything's working together to finish out this year. So as we move into 2023 operations, we did get our initial State Water Project allocation last week at 5%. That's about a little under 5,000 acre feet of Table A for our agency, which is just about a month's worth of water if you look at it in monthly demands. It's not great, but it's not zero. So 5% is more than I was expecting to see for the initial allocation. So that's good. The state is also seeing that there are contractors still asking for human health and safety allocations again. SCV Water is not one of those agencies, but I'll get into that a little more on the next slide. Like I said, the reservoir levels are still low, so we have a ways to go, and DWR is probably going to be pretty conservative with regards to the allocations, just seeing how variable the last couple of years has been. So it may take a while for that allocation to come up, even if we get some good storms. We see that runoff observed after those early storms. That's good. We're going into that triple dip La Nina. So we do anticipate a below average year, hopefully similar to last year. And that's as bad as it will get. Our dry year water supplies are in good shape. We talked a little bit about that in October when Matt and I came to the board. So we do have dry year water supplies available if conditions do stay dry for a few years moving forward. And then again, that conservation is really anticipated to help us moving into next year to reduce that demand. So in regards to the human health and safety, I just wanted to go through that again because it is a pretty hot topic. Human health and safety is basically a calculation that we provide DWR, and it's for 55 gallons per person per day. And so you assume your population for 2023 and do a calculation of 55 gallons per day. SCV water ends up at about 19,400 acre feet of human health and safety demands. And then what the state does is they say, okay, if you have no table A water, what other supplies do you have available to meet those health and safety demands? Now, there's some contractors that don't have many other supplies as we do, and so they have to request that water from DWR. We are not that agency, but for 2023, other state water contractors have requested upwards of 251,000 acre feet for 2023. As a total. So that's quite a huge chunk of water that the state is having to allocate for other agencies. Again, we requested zero. And the reason being, if you look at this graphic here, you can see this is our human health and safety demands. And then these are all the different supplies. So we have our groundwater supplies, recycled water, Buena Vista, carryover, banking supplies, flex. We have all these other supplies other than table A to be able to meet those human health and safety demands. And that's why we don't request any water from DWR. So that's a good thing. Our water supply portfolio's got us backed up. And then lastly, I wanted to go through the operating plan for 2023. So sorry, this is in the way, and I have no idea how to make that go away. But this is our 2023 5% initial allocation. So this is where we're starting. I'm showing a 15% allocation and a 20% allocation, and then the what if 2024 ends up being dry again. And so you can see here we have our demand. So we're anticipating about 70,500.
Hey, Sarah.
What is Sarah,
your audio's drifting. Maybe it drifted all the way.
Is that better again? I'm replugging in.
Back. Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Where did you lose me? You can see my mouse moving. Huh?
Yeah, why don't you just start over? You weren't too far in, I don't think.
So what I was saying was I was going to go through our operating plan. I'm showing our operating plan for the initial allocation of 5% here in red. We've got if it bumps up to 15% allocation and 20% allocation in 2023. And then lastly, the what if 2024 is dry and a 5% allocation again. Reason we do that is, as a reminder, is just to make sure that all the operations that we're doing this year keep us in line and prepared if 2024 ends up dry again. So we're just prepping for the unknown. So starting out, we've got our demands at about 72,500 acre feet for 2023. We move down and we've got our two groundwater supplies, so the alluvial and the saugus, and they total about 24,500 acre feet. And we have our recycled water. And that leaves us with about 47,000 acre feet of imported demands to meet. So the first place we go is to our firm supplies. We've got our table A and our BVRRB. So this is a 5% allocation amount for us. And we always get that 11,000. Love that 11,000. But even with that water, we end up with a shortfall. So we're short about 31,500 acre feet. And so with that shortage, we have to start dipping into our dry year supplies again. I'm happy to say we've got I'm estimating a healthy supply of carryover for next year and at least 16,000 acre feet. So that's a really good padding to have. We anticipate that we could get up to 15,000 acre feet from our Rosedale program, 5,000 from our semi-tropic banking program, and hopefully at least 1,000 from our Yuba program. I don't think we're going to need our state water contractors dry year water purchase or flexible storage. The flex storage is here, so that's still a bonus if we need it. And what we've added here, and I think we did this in the October presentation as well, is we're treating conservation. So moving into 2023, we will still be in Tier 2 water shortage contingency plan and ordinance. So I've estimated at least 15% of our demand to be reduced, making this kind of about just under 11,000 acre feet is what I hope we can get next year from our conservation programs. And I think that we definitely can, staying in tier two, as long as conditions stay the same. And so with that, in addition to all of our supplies, at the bottom here, I show what we anticipate to have in carryover moving into 2024. And so again, one of the things that we've been recognizing is that carryover, treating carryover as a supply is really been critical, especially in these dry years. And our goal is to keep that carryover anywhere between 10 and 20,000 acre feet a year. So that gets us in our sweet spot. If we move up to a 15% allocation, you can see we, basically the changes are that we would reduce some of our banking supplies and end up with a little bit more carryover at the end of the year. And if conditions were bad again in 2024, assuming that we're where we're at now, this would be our operating plan, and we would still end up with about 15,000 acre feet of carryover. So we still have that bonus water there, not knowing what could happen with our local supplies or other things like that. So I think this is a good plan. Probably won't change too much until we find out kind of how the winter pans out. Let's see. And so I think that's it for my presentation. Basically kind of just have to wait and see how things come about. Hopefully we'll get some atmospheric rivers hitting the northern area. Keep that precipitation coming in each month, and think snow. We need that snow.
Thank you, Sarah. Any questions from members of the public on item 4.1?
There is none.
Thank you. Questions of committee members for Sarah? Director Crawley.
Yeah, Sarah, when was the last time we put water into a bank?
I put water into the bank in 2019.
Okay, and how much water do we put in? Do you remember? I'm sorry, if I'm putting you on the spot, then don't.
You're really pushing my memory, but I'll see what I can do. I actually prepared some extra slides for you, Director Colley, knowing that you might have some of these questions. Do you want me to go to those slides? Because I knew you were going to ask. And Najwa and I put some information together about, looking at the probability of filling up our banking supplies again as we use them. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valuable information. I think that looking at the past and the history and this over a very long, we've been doing banking in earnest, I think, for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. But, my sort of rough memory is that on the first half of that 20 years, we put a boatload of water in. And now in the first 10 years of that 20 years, we put the water in, and the last 10 years we've been taking water out. And that's what's concerning me. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to see the data, but I don't know if I'm the only one.
No, let's run through them. We've got a decently light agenda. So
well, thank you, sir.
If let's
you
roll out a little.
oh,
Your audio went away.
Maybe we won't.
Am I back?
There you go. You're back.
I am so sorry. Okay. So let's start with kind of looking at one thing I think that will help just give you perspective. As I put together, I'm sorry, this thing needs to go away. There you go. Put together just what has our State Water Project Table A allocations looked like since 2000? Because I think where we get caught up a lot is that it has been so dry in the last 3 years. But one thing I think that's important to remember is California tends to have those extremes. We go from really dry to really wet. And so this graphic kind of shows you since 2000, you can see we've had some huge allocation years. We have gotten dry, you know, starting in 2014, we were pretty dry. But even between 2014 and now, we've had some really big allocations. And so when you ask, you know, when did you put water into our banking facilities last? 2017, we definitely put water in, and 2019. But one thing to remember is in those years, our banking facilities were pretty full also. So there really wasn't a lot of space because Rosedale was already full. So what happened in those years was we weren't able to put water necessarily into the bank, but we did quite a few of exchanges, 2-for-1 exchanges. And when we started having dry conditions in 2020, the first thing we did was utilize those exchange water that was available. And that basically, I think we only used about just under 7,000 acre feet of banking supplies in 2020. So that's good because we had so much exchange water available. So just kind of trying to give you some confidence that we will have wet years again. I'm not saying it will happen this year, but the probability of it happening is pretty good.
Sarah, this is Bill. Mm-hmm. If we get a 40% allocation, that really meets all of our needs, doesn't it? Somewhere between 35 and 40%. Did you lose Sarah again?
I'm here.
Here we are. So, yeah, anything above 40% allocation really is gravy to us, that we have the opportunity to bank it, to do water exchanges. There's lots of things that we can do with it in those years.
And you know, honestly, I think that when we get to those allocation years, I mean, the second it starts raining again, we've had so much conservation that overall our demands have dipped down, and it's going to take a few years for us to rebound back to those higher demands that may be listed in the urban plan. So we'll even have more wiggle room with regards to like how much people use, because they'll have some new things in place to help them save water more than they had previously. So yes, definitely 35 to 40% allocation is a nice place for us to start making decisions about some surplus water supply.
What is DCR?
The delivery capability report is the DCR. So that's the report that DWR puts out every 2 years, and they utilize their CalSIM model to give us an idea of what would the average deliveries be on State Water Project. And so they factor in climate change, they factor in delta regulations, things like that. And so you can see that we use the DCR when we do the urban planning, things like that. But the average has gone from about 62% delivery reliability in average years from the State Water Project down to, I think we're at about 58% right now for 2022. So that's kind of giving us an idea of where should we be on average.
Okay.
Put all these together. Yeah. Any other questions on this one? Would you like bonus slide number 2?
Sure.
Have I convinced you yet, or do you need more? I guess that's the question.
Bonus slide 2.
Wait, I have a question.
Oh, wait, no, Director Umbridge.
Sorry. So for 2021 and 2022, the DCR average dot is way up there. Can you talk about the gap between that and then what we were allocated, the 5%? What does that mean?
The delivery capability report is just a model.
We can't hear you.
You have to turn towards your microphone.
So can I try to, it would be the, if you took all of the time and added them all up and divided by the number of years, that would be approximately that dot. But although it's forward looking, taking all those averages and looking at other constraints that they anticipate happening, regulatory stuff. And
it's their capability, not the allocation.
What they think the average will be of all of those bars over the next 100 years.
Yes.
What's that?
100 years, but
yeah. And if you had infinite storage ability, that's what they think you're, you know, you could use each year and get away with it. If you have limited storage, of course, you can't get to that number, even if that number is correct.
So in a water supply assessment, when we forecast an average year for supplies, the DCR average is what's used for that calculation. And then, of course, we have multiple dry year and single dry year as well.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Chair Ford, is that there are other red dots that are in the urban plan or that we use for water supply assessments that analyze the other side of the equation, which is the dry year and the multiple dry year. And so I think what Sarah and Najwa are trying to do here is just show you kind of the equation that Ed's going through on the average. You're gonna have years that you have above average and years that you have below average. But in those years that you have above average, you need to be putting water in, and then it's available for those years when they're below average.
You know, with this chart and Bill's comment, I think suggests to me is that, you know, again, we're looking at 22 years of time that we have been heavily engaged in water banking. And to the comment that when you get to the 35, 40%, you know, it's a sweet amount that we then have all of our needs pretty much met, and then banking becomes possible, which is pretty much what I see there, is that from 2000 to 2013, we're able to completely fill the banks, and we never had any need to use any of it. It felt at the time like there was 13 years of us throwing money away because we're putting all this money into the bank and we're had no need for it. And clearly, at 2014 and till now, we've been profiting huge from that investment. But you know, so I'm just trying to get straight in my mind how. This is a very long-term issue, and you know, our water banks are substantially down. I mean, we're in good shape, you know, and if we have the next 13 years that we can totally refill them again, or even 5 years or 2 years, it'd be great. But I'm just, you know, I look at the 2021, 2022. And see, you know, the no historical time when we're down at 5% for multiple years. And, you know, I just see an unknown future. And just banking on the idea that is it eventually going to have a wet year? Okay. Yeah. I just have no idea what eventually is. And eventually, the fact that there are rarely been two dry years in a row doesn't mean, let me put it this way. If you flip a coin, it's each time you flip it, it's a 50-50 probability. So the odds of flipping heads six times in a row are very, very low. But if you've flipped heads five times in a row, you now have still a 50-50 chance of the sixth time happening. So the fact that 21 and 22 were both very, very dry does not make 23 more likely to be wet. It's kind of my.
That is absolutely correct. Can you hear me again?
Yes.
Okay, good. But I think, you know, one thing to think about too, in addition to what you just said, Director Colley, is that, you know, historically we have had some significant droughts in the past and they don't last forever. So, we have to keep that in the back of our mind too. We have the CalSim models now using 92 years of different hydrology, and it's looking at all that and kind of giving us an idea of what is the probability of 2023 being dry again. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but the probability is low. So the probability of it being dry like this for another 5 years, I think, is extremely low. So,
sir, let me.
I think the key to this is that you have enough programs. You're going to have wet years. Wet years are going to come. That you have enough programs to where you can put water in those wet years, because you're limited in Rosedale, Rio Bravo, to how much you can put in. So you need to have multiple programs that when those years do, because we had years back in the early 2000s and in the 90s that we didn't have places to put water. So we just need to have, and I think that's what the group has been looking at. We're looking over at AVAC and some of the other areas out there where we can store water. And I think that's key to us being able to meet the future, is to have more of those programs available to us.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. I just don't want, when we say things like wet years will eventually come, which is a true statement, that is not to say that the odds of 2023 being a wet year are any bigger than they're actually. The odds of 2023 being a wet year are actually statistically lower, because there is a correlation from one year to the next. So, you know, we used to use this really stupid Monte Carlo method in order to create a statistical model, which leaves out the correlation, the temporal correlation from day to day, month to month, year to year. And so it's not, absolutely agree that we need to be looking huge at, you know, particularly as the valley grows and our ability to get more Table A is constrained, we absolutely have to be looking into the future for more banks, you know, and Sites Reservoir and all those things. But looking right now and just saying, oh, well, the wet years will come isn't the most, doesn't make me real comfortable, because I look at that, you know, from 2014 on, and I say, you know, that may be our new normal, and during those years we have trouble putting water back in the bank. Sorry.
Two related questions. I thought some of our, I don't know if it's banking or storage agreements, expire, and then we need to find new banks. So that's one question. We could start with that. Does something end at a certain time, like time certain, and we can't use that bank anymore? Or is it more like we have to pull the water out by a certain time?
There's a couple different arrangements. Sarah, do you want to talk through it? You want me to take a stab?
But it's a true statement that sometimes things expire. They're not going to go on forever.
They have extensions that are defined in the agreements and in ways that we would negotiate to extend. But yes, there are events in the agreements that require us to either extend them or not.
Okay.
The Rosedale banking arrangement's a little bit different in that it's more of a, rather than a date certain, it's a amount. You can cycle through the bank twice.
Okay.
100,000 acre foot
then
each
have to renegotiate.
For a total of 200,000.
Still open to renegotiation.
Correct.
Okay, that's Rosedale.
Yeah.
And can you hear me again?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I can. I'm sorry. I can answer the semi-tropic one if you want to.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I thought that was
The semi-tropic agreement ends around 2035, and then we have the option to extend it for two more 10-year terms.
Okay.
So that gets us through to 2055.
Probably none of us would be worried about that at that point.
But we are worried about it. Okay. Yeah, we are starting to look at those things for sure, because the other agreements that we're starting to consider and how we layer those programs and how far we go with those programs to
just so something's always available, basically. Okay, and then other question, I heard Sarah use both La Nina and atmospheric rivers as issues, you know, related to water supply. Are they related? Do we know that they're related or not? Because I thought, what I know is I heard a conference presentation that said the atmospheric rivers are much more important to water supply than La Nina issues. Does that mean, are they linked or not, or do you know? I'm just curious.
Generally in La Nina conditions, and it's not a guarantee every year, but generally the atmospheric rivers get pushed further north of California. So that's kind of like the, am I with you still?
Yes.
That's the trend for La Nina. But I mean, in saying that, 2017, which was a huge snow year and we had huge atmospheric rivers come through, that was a La Nina year too. So there's no guarantee. It's just on average, more of those atmospheric rivers are pushed north in La Nina conditions. Okay. And then atmospheric rivers are really important for California because, you know, we generally get a majority of our snowpack and our precipitation from a few large atmospheric rivers each year. We don't get that consistent rain every day. So those storms are important.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I just had one more slide that Najwa helped prepare that I think would be really helpful to this conversation. And it's basically looking at the probability of end of year storage in Rosedale. And so, you know, we can't predict the future, but we can look at the probability. And so our new GoldSim model is really good at helping us kind of look at these scenarios. And so one of the things that I wanted to share is this right here. We're gonna look at the Rosedale existing portfolio. So if you're looking specifically at our Rosedale banking program, we have looked at the exceedance frequency for 2023 through 2050. That's what all the lines are. And I'll explain this. So basically where the star is right now is where our storage in Rosedale lies at the beginning of 2023. And if you look at all the different hydrological things that have happened in the past and only look at 2023, what this is showing us is that there's only about less than 10% probability that our storage is gonna be less than we are now. About 20% probability that we stay exactly the same, and then a 75% probability that our storage is going to increase, and that's just looking at this year. So if you look out to 2030, 2035, and 2050, what this shows us is that the probability of our storage levels even dropping below where we are currently at is almost nothing. Looking at the hydrology, you know, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for us to put water back in. And when we do get those opportunities, we have, Director Cooper said, you know, anything over 35%, 40% allocation, if we get a 90% allocation, we have almost too much water. We don't have enough places to put it. We're limited on what we can put it in. So it's not going to be a problem filling that up. And I think this kind of backs it up. And so this is looking at with our existing portfolio. So everything that we have with our supply portfolio now. And then on this right-hand side graphic, it shows us looking with our urban water management plan portfolio. And so the urban water management plan includes adding Saugus wells 3 through 8 to our portfolio. And it also adds another 10,000 acre feet of recovery capacity at Rosedale. And one thing you'll see is that these lines, for example, the 2050 line looks a bit lower with the future portfolio with the urban plan. And the reason being is that in this portfolio, we're actually using the bank more frequently, because we have more take capacity, so it doesn't fill as quickly. So in this one, we're only assuming 10,000 acre feet of firm take capacity. And in this one, we're assuming 20,000 acre feet of firm take capacity. So hopefully, Director Holly, this can give you a little bit more confidence that exceedance frequency is looking good. The math, this is the best I can do with my I can't remember what it's called, my thing. I'm looking into the future. That's the best I can do.
So
that's the information we have, but the probabilities are looking good that we most likely won't land under where we're at now, moving into the future.
So in my trying to understand this chart, I guess the y-axis is confusing me. I'm reading this, there's a 50% chance that we'd be able to deliver, looks like around 7,000 acre feet. Is that what I'm out of Rosedale Rio Bravo?
No, the y-axis is the amount in storage in the bank.
The amount in storage, and that's 70,000 acre feet. So our storage at the beginning of 2023 is at about 58,000 acre feet right now for the start of this new water year.
Okay, so the per year, what? How do I get acre feet per year in a total storage?
So basically, there's a 50% chance, if we're looking at 2050, this green line right here, there's a 50% chance that our storage will be a little over 80,000 acre feet or up to 100,000 acre feet. So there's a 50% chance we'll be there. And there's a 50% chance that our storage could range from the 83,000 acre feet down to, you know, what is that?
Okay, so maybe my misunderstanding, or my understanding then, if it would, I would be better understanding it if I was to leave the per year off and just simply say that's acre feet on the y-axis units. Is that is that what I'm supposed to understand?
Yes.
We can't hear.
Sarah, we lost you again.
Hey, am I back?
Yes.
That's the end of year storage per year. So the probability would be this would be where your end of year storage would land at the end of each year.
It's still it per year implies a rate, not a total.
Yeah, I read that as a division. But okay. At end of year, maybe. Okay.
Acre feet in storage, or?
Well, it's taking the 2050 line. It's saying there's a 100% chance that you will be no lower than that.
Right.
That you will
in be. In acre feet, not in acre feet per year.
No, not in per year.
Right.
In acre feet in storage.
Yeah, okay.
I see where you say per year on the side.
Yeah. I was looking at the y-axis, and it made no sense to me.
You take the per year off.
Okay.
Najwa just sent a Teams thing that says it's acre feet in storage. So,
yes.
Okay.
And I think that's one thing we'd ask. Sarah had followed up and asked, hey, should I have something prepared? I said, yeah, let's have a couple things. So, Najwa and Sarah were able to kind of work through a couple slides to help stimulate thought. We're not ending here. Obviously, the gold SIM model is still going through some, final wrap-up testing. And I think, we'll have an opportunity to come to the committee in the future, next year, I'm guessing, to really walk through that tool and how we can use it to help us try to understand, probabilities, right? And we all understand that it's the statistics involved, and we're trying to use the best available information and assumptions and things to help make, good policy decisions. So that pool is going to be, I think, very critical for us to test those questions about how much banking is needed, how much is enough. And so that tool is very sophisticated in looking at a long record of time, right? So it's running through the historical record and running that up into our actions and our supply portfolio. And so I'm excited about that. Not quite ready, but this gives you a little peek at kind of some of those capabilities that are going to be able to start coming out of that we can discuss and use.
Quick additional question. The 83,000 and 78,000 that are mentioned there, are those our goals? Is that our sweet spot where we want to be, or what does 83,000 and 78,000 represent? In the footnotes, why did you pick those numbers?
She just wanted to point out that in this graphic, the 50%,
oh,
50% line lands around 83,000. I think the goal is to have the banks as full as we can.
And full is what for them? What's
full? Full for Rosedale would be 100,000 acre feet.
Okay. Okay. So it was more 50% of the time it's going to be this. Mm-hmm. That with emphasis on the 50%, not our goal is that, correct. And we can only meet it 50. Okay, got it.
But I think you're hitting on how the tool will be helpful for setting policy, right? Okay. The policy question is,
right,
how full do you want the banks? Well, right, you know, there's probabilities of where are you comfortable where you want the bank? And,
right.
And so that, I think, will help us work through some of those, you know, higher level policy questions.
Because if we say we want the banks filled up, that's a very low percentage of time.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we got to set our goal.
And then that in turn would say, oh, then we need to invest like this to make
sure
that's
our goal.
We have that capability. Yeah.
And the culture model actually allows us to add different banking facilities and kind of priorities of where do we want to take them, how do we want to fill them, what priority, what bank gets what priority, so we can kind of run through different scenarios to see what other facilities would work best for add to our portfolio too, so we can play around with that.
You're saying good things, Sarah, but it's drifting off. But anyway, there's more to come.
Yeah. No, Sarah, I appreciate your bringing this and the extra information very much. I appreciate your anticipation of my
ready for you.
Yeah, ready for the question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions?
No, I just want to say thank you to Director Colley. I think that was good, and I'm really glad that it initiated this conversation and that Sarah had these slides ready to go to show us. So thank you. I appreciate that. I thought that was really good. Just a couple, well, I guess one comment, one question. The comment on the slide on actual demand versus estimated demand, I think, for this last year, and you talked about the gap where we didn't have to seek more water because of the actions that our customers have taken. Just want to always say kudos to our customers and ratepayers for doing that. That's wonderful. And then the question I had related to the health and safety allocations, of which we've not requested any, because we have various sources, which is a great thing. So the question I have is, since we're playing nice and we're being nice partners statewide, which is a very good thing, and kudos to the agency for doing that, do we get any incentives or anything when we maybe apply for grants and things like that in for being good team players?
No, not yet. But I will say this. This is a very live topic right now between the state water contractors and the state.
Okay.
There is a fairness question for sure that is being posed by not just us, but agriculture also has, right, because they... 250,000 acre foot kind of gets taken off the table, and there's others that have need that may not be health and safety. So it is a very complex question that the state is going to be working their way through. And so we, as a state water contractor, Matt Stone, the general manager, obviously is engaged in that discussion through the state water contractors currently. So it has not been resolved about how to fairly fill it or pay it back, for instance. But that question has been asked by several of the contractors about how should the state go about doing that.
Okay.
So there will be more to come on that for sure. There are a lot of entities that are interested in having that discussion.
Thank you.
No more questions. Sarah, I have a parting shot. Can you put up the allocation bar graph again? Just want to show some of the complications of being a water resource planner. And
it's the sharing the screen. That's my complications.
I was thinking about your other headaches.
Just throw your computer out the window and get a new one.
There you go,
Jonathan.
I meant the last two slides you gave us. You gave us one.
Okay.
I'm going to probably ask you to go back to this, to the main presentation, too, just for a second. But
this one?
No. Just your allocation one, the one where you showed the DCR and the dots, the one that you did for director calling.
The first bonus. First bonus.
The first call. There you go. So just for the committee's benefit and to explain the difficulties that the Water Resources Department does, as you mentioned, Director Colley, we were pretty fat there in the start of this whole process. And then there we were in 2011 with an 80% allocation and no place to put water, and so we spilled. So the Water Resources Planner at the time went up to the Delta and cried as it all went out into the bay, and that would be me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that's one of the difficulties of the job is trying to find
yourself a lot of buckets and brought it home.
It'd be with salmon and they would have put me in jail. Okay. Is that, can you find the right amount? And the model should help find the right amount of banking capacity for what you need so that you avoid spilling water, or you spill water less in frequent years, and then you have supplies to withdraw as it's needed. So I just wanted to point that out. Maybe the day will come again when we will spill. But then, Sarah, go back to the NOAA chart, too, in your original presentation.
Can I make a comment to this slide that yes. I think is,
and
by way of discussion, I see a little bit in this slide the our problem that is somewhat analogous to the Colorado River projects. Okay. So at the time that we were investing in banking heavily, the beginning of this century, we had plenty of water to fill them. Things were great, just like the Colorado River when they were building in the mid-1900s, right? They had lots of rain and those reservoirs filled and everybody was happy and we're going to have all this water to share. And then things changed. And so I just think there's a little bit of an analogy there that I think we need to remember that we should not count on those, a decade of wet years. As Bill pointed out, we need to have a place to store it when we get those wet years. But I think that I'm in agreement with you that it is very hard.
And then the other thing I want to point out, Sarah, if you go back to your main presentation and bring up the NOAA slide, the NOAA forecast. So looking at this, the one thing I noticed is that the forecast that NOAA put out for the seasonal precipitation outlook was issued in November 17th, 2022. Mm-hmm. And I think that it reflects a lower possibility of us going to neutral conditions on ENSO. And so that might be a tad pessimistic, and we talk about three La Niñas in a row and how that's going to affect. We're looking like we're losing La Niña, so it may be better than we're 2.5 La Niñas, so we may be okay in that regard.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully NOAA puts out something new and then they can, because their monthly precipitation outlook looked really dismal before too, and then reality intervenes as it often does with modeling. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the same thing happens for the seasonal one. Anyway, that's all I had, Sarah. Thank you for the presentation. And so with that, we'll move on to item 4.2. Dr. El Hassan, did you want to talk at all about staff activities for the department?
I think Steve is going to do it.
I'll
leave myself for January.
let's start May fresh in January, right? So I just had a couple things that I wanted to share with the committee. And one of those, it's been really fun to have Ali on the staff and engaging. I think you'll come to find him, the way he thinks through things is going to be very beneficial to the agency. Very strategic and goal-orientated person. So getting to know everybody, right, is the challenge, right? A new person, especially the boss coming in, learning the staff, getting those relationships built. But he has been investing an enormous amount of effort in doing that. And the staff, to their credit, has been receptive to getting to know Ali and more to come. So just wanted to share that with you all. Trying to come up to speed in these complex, our agency has some very complex arrangements, not only locally, but in the state. And Ali's showing the skill set to come up to speed very quickly. So just wanted to give him kudos for that. But for this month, I was just going to share a couple things. I think Director Armitage pointed out at the board meeting, because the report had it in it, that staff was able to meet with the city so far on MeWello. So that's the model water efficient landscape ordinance. You'll recall we've had quite the robust discussions over the performance of that ordinance. It was really good. The city dedicated some time. We had Tom Cole, kind of the head of the group there, along with his kind of lead planners. We were able to talk through with them kind of what are they, you know, how are they complying with MeWello. I think they're generally doing a good job. They've actually retained a consultant to help them. They haven't been reporting like they should be. And so that's one thing that they are very focused on, working with that consultant. You know, I kind of break up MeWello into a few different things. Like it's kind of like the planning, design, the building of it, inspecting that it got built right. And then there's this last piece, which is kind of this auditing type provision that was included in the legislation. I think, you know, the city is going to be doing everything they're supposed to be doing on the planning, designing, building, inspecting. I forgot reporting, but reporting's in there. And one of the elements that we talked about that the county has been doing but the city hadn't been doing was sharing the plan electronically with the water agency. So we take that electronic plan and we put it into our data set, so that we have really detailed planning level documents of irrigation, especially the bigger irrigation systems. It's important for us to get that. The city committed to making sure that was part of their process to get us those documents. So that was one of the main pieces that we achieved there. The auditing piece is tough. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of walk you through auditing that it got installed properly. That's pretty easy, mm-hmm. right? They're inspecting it. The city has an inspector. Did it get built to plan? Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes. We can audit. Yes, it got built to plan. The legislation was not really clear on what auditing was to mean. Mm-hmm. To me, it means performance more, I think. Like, it got built to achieve a certain standard, and it's either performing or not performing. And that to me is like, that's what the audit would be most purposeful for going forward. So I bring that up. That is not resolved. It's not easy, and maybe not even the responsibility of the city to do that piece, mm-hmm. because they don't have the customer, right? When it gets built, inspected, reported,
they're done.
And that connection, that service connection, then is a water agency customer. The city doesn't have the data on billing or, that they could look at performance. They'd have to ask us. I mean, we could provide it. But I just really think what you're going to see the staff look at, we are moving forward with the capability of having water budget targets for the whole agency. We will have the toolkit to be able to do this type of auditing in a way that I think will be most efficient for the community. So I just raised that up, this idea that somebody's got to pick up that kind of performance piece and in a way that we can hopefully communicate to those people that they're either performing or not performing based upon what the design was for their place. So that was a long way to get around. We're going to meet with the county, do something similar, kind of their full layout. You'll hear more from us on the water budget targets. Matt will talk through that. We have a consultant on board working through that right now to get us up to speed on. There was a big portion of the agency that previously didn't have that technical capability. They will over this next year. So that's where that's at. I just wanted to give you guys kind of a full look at that. Couple other things. We had the opportunity to meet with Rosedale Rio Bravo. I think Matt mentioned that management level. And then we also met at Aqua. And then we've done a kind of a management staff level meeting with Rosedale as well. And we all agreed that we're going to set up a monthly meeting to just make sure we're communicating. That program is really important to our dry year supplies. They have new requirements through Sigma and other things that they're dealing with, much like we are here locally. So we just all agreed that, a real open communication is advantageous to both of our parties. And Irvine Ranch actually participated in that agreement too, because they are a partner as well. So that was really good. The staffs, you can tell Sarah and Zach, who is at Rosedale, have a really good working relationship, and they're the ones that make it happen, right? They're the ones turning things on, turning things off, making requests about how much. So very positive. And then we also met with United Water Conservation District staff management. We do that monthly. I think you'll start to see, we're working on a lease agreement for Castaic. Hopefully we can get that together not too far off. That's looking, trying to be prepared for when we have water again. So that's being able to release additional resources out of Castaic, Article 21 specifically, out of Castaic Reservoir, and have a cost benefit understanding about how you could align cost and benefit of that release. So those are good. Their staff's great, and we enjoy talking with them. We're going to go down and do next in January. We'll go down. We're going to meet them at their offices, do a little tour, and then talk more about that arrangement. So more to come there. But those are the things I just wanted to highlight for y'all.
Thank you, Steve. Any comments from members of the public coming?
There is none.
Okay, questions from the
Amen.
Directors?
The conversation of spilling out of Castaic Lake with Article 21 water, it seems to me that forms a good foundation for other possible, because the things that we might do in this valley to recharge could, of course, benefit the downstream user on the other side of Blue Cut and all those things. And so I'm particularly happy to hear those discussions and maybe, mentioning in those discussions the other potential long-term benefits and discussions that could tear off of those. So I think that's really beneficial. So
great. Thank you.
Director Bitzel.
A couple of questions on the Mead Willow, if I'm pronouncing it right. You talked about auditing, you know, post-construction, post, you know, being cleared. It seems like, well, does the city do any auditing of the design that, you know, let's say 10 years from now, whatever, some HOA or property management company says they don't like the way it looks and they change it. Does the city check that? Because I know with trees and things, if you tell the city that so-and-so cut down a tree, they'll go check, but they don't necessarily proactively make places. Yeah. They don't, they won't check if you don't tell them, but if you tell them, hey, this place used to have five big trees, they'll cut them all down, then they'll go make them put the tree back. And can the city do it? Like, is it in the regulation that they can do it, and are they going to, or is there just nothing there for the design, maintaining the original design intent?
Yeah, I think that's a good question.
Okay.
That we didn't raise that.
Okay, so ask that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Because I would think, you know, if you change the design or they decide, we want, you know, who knows what, I mean, people just design stuff all the time without checking the background, and, you know, maybe they decide to put grass back in because somebody wants grass or a park or something. And then secondarily, for usage auditing, you know, are they using this amount of water that we expect? Is the authority granted to us in the regulation to do that or not? Or we don't know, because if we think that, you know, that's something that we're going to need to have the authority on, if it's prevalent enough, we could look at, you know, some regulatory modification to give us the ability. Because if we don't have the ability and then we start doing it, I mean, most people would be cooperative, but some people might not.
Yeah, I think that's another good question.
Okay.
So we'll give that some thought. You know, there's a bunch of different ways that you can get after that, that we, you know, are starting to think through. I mean, you can have rates that are assigned with it, right?
Right. And if they go out of it, yeah.
So there's that. There's probably fines or things that we could do if we set up to do that. So yeah. that's a good question too.
And
so
if they change, I guess if we do that, if they change the design, who cares, as long as they stay under their water usage, that the intent. Mm-hmm. So that kind of does, if we have that authority, that kind of accomplishes both things.
Yeah. And so we're, you know, as I mentioned, we're trying to build the capacity of being able to measure it.
Yeah.
And then it does come to the question of, okay, well, what do you do if they're not performing?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think, and that's the issue with a lot of regulations. People get very excited about, I passed this regulation doing this thing, and then they don't think about how it's implemented, and then it's just not, is what happens. So, okay.
Yes. So, I mean, were you talking about auditing, like the auditing component?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the question that I had too is, it was entirely clear to me. So currently are you saying there's no auditing going on right now, or there is?
I would say their auditing is inspecting that it was installed properly.
Okay. And that's the city doing that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
But there's some thought that perhaps that could come to the agency to do the auditing component?
I think the definition of what auditing means in the legislation is not clear. When you read it, it doesn't define how the auditing is to be done. And so when I read it like, well, how would you do that? You're going to need to measure performance for auditing, or more like Director Greenside saying, has it been changed in some way?
Right.
But the city is not, once they've gone through the inspection and made sure it's been installed per plan, is not doing an additional step currently.
There's no follow-up once it's done.
And so I'm on the Aqua Local Government Committee. So if that's something you want me to bring to the committee to take up, I'm happy to do that. So let me know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just any other questions from directors? Just to keep in your back pocket is that any kind of significant project, the city and county have conditions of approval, and usually landscape plans are conditions of approval. So like if I build a commercial building. And then one day my tenant or myself says, you know, I'm not getting the traffic I need. I'm going to put this great big advertising sign. This is, no, I'm sorry. Your conditions of approval say, you know, you may not do that. And that's life of project. And so they have to come back in for a subsequent approval. Landscaping plans on big projects, in my experience, are treated the same way. You know, if you diverge significantly from what's shown on your landscape plans, then you have violated conditions of approval and the city can say, hey, you need to remedy. So there is an enforcement mechanism there. Zoning enforcement is always a challenge. And the city will chafe, and the county too. But they have a tool. If it absolutely comes down to it, in the example that Dr. Gutzak gave, if somebody had, you know, drought-tolerant landscaping and then said, you know, I just love the turf look, and so we're going to put that all in. I think one possibility is that we could say to the city, we think, you know, their water usage is spiked, and we think that the landscaping is not consistent with what was approved by the city, and therefore, you know, we don't have tools to remedy it. You guys do.
Yeah.
And that's also a really big project, CEQA as well, too. CEQA mitigation becomes conditions of approval. Yeah. So, you know, a couple of tools that you could.
Yeah.
You could.
Even, yeah, barring nothing else that is already there.
Right.
But my point was, people usually some places make the change and the city won't catch it unless somebody complains.
But in a case of, say, a drought tolerant landscaping, we're the ones who catch it.
Yeah.
Say, hey, their irrigation meter is 2.5 times
what was planned.
Well, in that case, measurement.
Yeah.
We did a site inspection and.
Kind of like Robinson Ranch.
You know,
where we have to monitor how much he uses out there because he's only allotted so much.
Oh, really? We do that monitoring? Oh, okay.
Because he only paid connection fees to monitor to irrigate his greens. None of the fairways.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, by way of background.
No, just say one more thing. I just want to say thank you. I should have preceded my question with saying thank you. I think it's really fantastic that you've initiated this conversation with the city, and it's going to go to the county too. And I think it's a really important one. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. So with that, we move to item 5.1, which is the status of drought response and performance presented by our sustainability manager, Matt Dickens.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
And can you guys see my, let me stop my sharing. Can you guys see my screen?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Chair Ford and members of the committee. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager. Just a quick comment on the pronunciation of Muello. All of them apply. It could be Miwello, Mwilo, Muello. I've heard it all different ways. So tonight's presentation will be about the drought status, the drought response and performance. First, we're going to turn to our local weather statistics. This is just kind of diving into those, a more granular perspective of what we're seeing here in the Santa Clarita Valley, because they will have direct impacts on our customer demand. So when we look at our CIMA Station 204 local evapotranspiration and precipitation data for the current month, this is through November, we did see it cooler by about 6.9% compared to 2020. We do use 2020 as the baseline in part because we do assess our conservation performance compared to the governor's 20% voluntary conservation call baseline, but also as we look at our forecasted demands for 2022. So we just like to keep track of this to see how things have changed. Year to date, though, we're up 6.4% evapotranspiration. Again, evapotranspiration is the amount of water that plants evaporate and transpire. So you can think about it as supplemental water that plants required in order to stay healthy and avoid wilt here in the valley. That's a significant decrease from early in the year where we were as high as 18% over 2020 levels. So cooler temperatures have been fairly persistent following the peak of this of the year. Precipitation in November, we saw 1.19 inches. However, calendar year to date, we are down 55% compared to 2020. And then we can see that our temperatures were significantly, our average max air temperatures were significantly lower than 2020 at 68.4 degrees in 2022 for the month of November compared to 75. Specifically in LA County, we do see some relief. Last month, the county was mostly in severe and extreme drought. That's red and orange, but we're starting to see some of the moderate drought conditions start to creep up. I believe previously only the Catalina Island and these other island chains were in the moderate drought category, but we're starting to see some drought relief creeping up further into LA County, although Santa Clara Valley specifically is still kind of split between extreme and severe drought conditions. Turning to our monthly production performance compared to the same month in 2020, the blue bar shows us 2020's production per month, and the brown bar is 2022 production, with the dashed line being 15% of the blue bar. And as we've seen through the entire year, we started off kind of at the same matching 2020 levels. Then we saw significant increases in February, March, and April due to the absence of rainfall. So those dry La Nina conditions in the spring certainly influenced, encouraged customers to increase their irrigation use. In April, the SCV Water Board of Directors, as Sarah said earlier, in late April, April 26th, declared stage two of the water shortage contingency plan. And then beginning in May, we start to see the delta between 2022 and 2020 start to increase. And for the third month in a row, here in November, we actually fell way below the 15% target. I'll dive further into that statistic. And so far in December, which we are tracking daily production compared to daily production December 2020, that trend is continuing to be significantly below those 2020 levels. This chart shows us our change in production in percent. The blue line is our monthly difference, and the orange line is cumulative difference, both ranging from January 2021 through November 2022. Anything above the black dashed line across the 100% line there is going to be an increase in production by a certain percent. Anything below is a decrease. And then I do have a trend line. Once we get to the governor's voluntary conservation call, which began in July of 2021, that's the grayed out period here, we can see what our stage two levels are, which is we need to get in between 91% and 80%. So that would be an 11 to 20% reduction compared to 2020. And we can see that we had two dry springs in a row. Those are those two double La Nina effects that had significant increases in production over 2020. But again, since May, we've seen our production, both monthly and cumulative, start to drop. Whereas we started peaking in August, we were about 10.1% below. In September, 17.2%. In October, 14.1%. And November, we were 21% below November 2020's production. So that's a pretty significant decrease, in part to those, due in part to those, I think, accumulation of engagement, communication, our non-functional turf ban prohibition from the State Water Resource Control Board, as well as our communication team's work on getting information out on stage two water waste restrictions and as other ways to conserve water. That messaging is really starting to get that level of performance into that 11 to 20% range for the third month in a row, which is, that's very promising. Although this chart does tell us, if we are to look at the last 2 year trend, that we might want to start preparing for a dry spring, particularly because when we look at the difference in percent, we're talking about in February through April of last year, that's about 3,000 acre feet over what we were hoping to accomplish. And that's not including just getting conservation. So you're talking about probably 3,000 to 4,000 acre feet that we could have saved if we were able to get in some great communication and springtime conservation practices on these two dates. So using this data to inform our decision-making process, we will be turning to developing smart irrigation practices for the springtime and proactively in advance of perhaps drier conditions should those materialize this spring. But again, here, I want to show what the performance of the community looks like relative to 2020 since the Stage 2 water shortage declaration. Our customers are conserving water at significant rates and in alignment with and in agreement with Director Armitage and other directors' comments on the success of our community. Conservation, communications, water resources, all of us are really appreciative of all of our community partners who have taken significant measures to conserve significant volumes of water. But with that, we need to maintain this level of conservation because the drought is not over and we, should La Nina conditions continue into a fourth year of drought, we need to retain those levels between 11 and 20%, perhaps more depending on the direction of the agency and the board. So how is our conservation performance relative to the state? The State Water Resource Control Board, we report to monthly. They report statewide conservation as well as regional conservation towards the governor's 15% conservation call. I kind of show here there's usually a bit of lag. So October is the most recent month that the state board has reported. So just focusing on that, for the month of October, the statewide conservation was 12.6%, where ours was 14.1%. And cumulative is down 5.2%, where we're at 1.8% below. So we outperformed the statewide average in October, but we're still a little bit below, about half, a little bit more than half below the statewide cumulative average conservation. We did slightly underperform South Coast. So South Coast region conserved 14.4% against our 14.1, and we're closer to 3.7. But based off of these numbers, this assessment, we're down 1.8%. It should be noted that since May, if we look at May through November 2022 versus May through November 2020, we're calculating a savings of 5,308 acre feet. So our actions and next steps in December, we are planning to kick off the Bridgeport Pocket Park Sustainable Landscape Demonstration Garden Construction Project. So that's very exciting. And we have secured that contract and signed the agreements with the construction firm. So soon the kickoff meeting will occur and then activities will begin in the not too distant future. In January and February, as I mentioned before, we want to prepare the community engagement for spring irrigation practices, hoping that we can smooth those increase curves if they were to continue, and it should January through April trend dry as it has in the previous 2 years. We want to get ahead of that to smooth that curve or to encourage sustained conservation. Also want to follow up with an additional dissemination of non-functional turf practices and services. With our initial reaction or our initial dissemination of information, we saw some customers take proactive action to turn off their sprinklers. However, due to these cool temperatures and rainfall, those grass areas that were turned off in the later fall are starting to green up already as cool season grasses like to stay green. That's why we often promote when the hills are alive communication, kind of from the sound of music, that if the hills are alive and they're green, you do not need to irrigate your landscapes. If your grass turns brown this time of year, it's because it's a warm season grass that's going dormant. Irrigating it will provide no benefit. Green grass and cool season grass will naturally turn green during this time of year with these temperatures and this type of precipitation. So it's a good way to kind of look around and see how the community looks, and then that can help you determine whether you need to irrigate at all. In March and April, we're looking at the continued lawn replacement program promotions. In November, the conservation team conducted a Water Matters webinar where we went through all the different programs that we offer and the process for lawn replacement program. That resulted in more than 15 new applications, and currently we have more than 100 in the queue. In addition to that, we have over 100,000 square feet of commercial turf conversion in the queue. So the community, again, is continuing to take action to conserve water. We also see some apartment complex projects starting to mobilize in the January and February. So those are things that will also add to significant savings. And March and April, like I said, loan replacement program promotions, and then considering Fix-A-Leak Week as an opportunity to engage with the public to take action to look inside their homes as well as around their homes to find leaks and to fix them. A pretty quick presentation tonight. Again, I'm very proud and thankful to the community. I'm proud for the savings that we have accomplished and the work that our team, both with our partners in the city and the county and the Sustainable Water Action Task Force, our conservation group, our communications team, our water resources team. But all of that work could not materialize in water savings without the persistent, consistent activity from our customers who have taken quite a bit of action to save water. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions from members of the public?
There's none.
All right. Thank you. Questions from members of the committee for Matt Dickens? Dr. Gutzeit.
Just real quick on your comparing us to the different regions slide. The cumulative, is that calendar year or water year? I always forget what we have.
Great question, Director Gutzeit. It's cumulative since July 2021. When the governor declared the 15% conservation savings target.
Okay, I wasn't expecting that. The further wrinkle.
another wrench in the spokes about accounting. Yes, it's a number we track.
Okay, and then his goal. So when he says, I want you to save 15%, is that, again, going back to July 2021, or because you give us monthly numbers. I know it's not monthly, but how will we succeed?
It's monthly and it's cumulative. So it's 15%. If you look at a month, your goal is to say, I want to be, in order to be in compliance with this request, 15% of whatever the production for that same month in 2020
was. Okay, so there is a monthly goal, and then is there a cumulative goal?
The cumulative goal is also 15%.
Okay.
So if theoretically, if we always met 15%, we would be 15% below.
Yes.
But we're going to have some months where we go greater than 15% and some months where we go less than. But for us, it's important that the cumulative, we can't get back those months that
occurred.
But the fact that we're on track monthly suggests that we're going to start incrementally getting closer and closer to the cumulative.
And they're
things have promising trends.
They're not talking about penalizing or anything if we don't. I mean, at present, are you hearing anything about penalties if we fail to hit either the monthly or cumulative goal by a certain date?
I have not heard, Director Goodside, again, great question regarding, have I heard chatter or discussion regarding transitioning from a voluntary paradigm to a mandatory? I have not.
Okay, thank you.
But last time in the drought, the way that it worked was if you weren't meeting in the last drought, the 2013 to 2017, when the regulatory emergency declaration was on board, it was mandatory to meet it on a monthly. If you were meeting it monthly, you were clear. If you weren't meeting it monthly, then you first received a conservation information order to ask what you're doing to conserve water. If you weren't complying, then the State Water Resource Control Board could take action to require you to do certain measures. And if you still didn't comply with that, then they had the ability and authority to fine the agency $10,000 a day.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for Matt? Dr. Crawley.
Yeah, this is another pretty big question, big picture question. I don't think it's very specific to Matt, so maybe I'll address it to the AGM. Back in the day when we had a separate retail arm, the retail arm particularly saw graphs of the wells, particularly on the east end, the ones we were worried about a lot. And in recent years, I don't think I recall seeing those kinds of graphs very often. And I think, we're kind of looking here at a the big picture of water supply and whatnot. And I think it would be useful to me to also have that kind of data where we can see wells that are potentially threatened or
that comes to engineering committee every month.
Oh, the engineering committee.
It's in the packet every month. Mm-hmm.
So it's on your engineering committee packet. Wells.
Okay. That's why I only see it infrequently because I don't always read that packet all the way through.
Take a look there.
Because E&O, all right. I get the operations side.
It's the operations side. But okay. we do have, you know, this unique thing now with SGMA and the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, and there's tracking of different criteria, minimum thresholds and other things. So let me talk through with Keith.
I mean, we probably don't need to see in this committee the level of detail. Hopefully, put lots of detail on the engineering committee. That's great. Could we get just a couple of sample wells that, you know, maybe have been problematic on the east end in the past?
Well, would it make sense to get an update on the GSA? Rather than a random well, if they picked certain,
there's new wells. Part of that. Yes. We could start reporting some. Yeah.
I think that's probably where we should land it is on the kind of a more of a SGMA update, and we can start. We're tracking those things, looking at key wells, and that'll give you a better idea of how it's tied into kind of the sustainability criteria and those things. So let us give that some thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of our water supply.
Oh, for sure.
The health of the groundwater to me is part and parcel of all the same conversation we've had for the last 2 hours. So,
yeah, and we have SGMA presentations scheduled this committee. So it's just a matter of starting to include some of that detailed information.
And if I remember, the annual report is due April.
Yeah, you'll probably do better than I am.
I think it's April, and it was like real tight last year. You know, so that's the one where it says whether we meet the indicators or not. So maybe right before that, we can talk about it here. If they'll have it all updated.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. We have that problem often with the committee structure where.
Yeah,
we're all looking at the elephant. Different. Thank you.
Yep.
German touch.
Thank you. Just want to say thank you for your presentation. I'm excited to see the pocket park work get started, and ultimately kind of the reaction of the public so we can think about what direction we want to go in the future with those. And also want to congratulate you on the success of the Water Talks webinar on lawn replacement. I know Kathy sent me some of the numbers, and combined with whoever participated live and the views after the fact, over 100 people, it seems, have watched it. And you mentioned the significant number of applications that have come in since. So to me, that's a huge success. So thank you to everybody who worked on that. I think that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Other questions from Matt? Thank you, Matt. Good presentation.
Thank you, Director Ford, and best of luck, sir.
Thank you. Then we have item 6, the committee calendar.
Nothing specific. This is the calendars there. That's where it is. I did want to take, before we close, a moment.
Wait, can I make a comment about the calendar?
Yes.
Sorry. it seems like the January committee meeting is going to have 3 pretty big topics. So I guess my request is if you can send out the packet as early as possible for those of us who like to read cover to cover, so that we have time to do that. I imagine they're going to be, you know, big reports. So, yeah, thank you.
Yep, well, we'll definitely put that in consideration. Some of those may move a little bit here.
Okay.
Definitely. I hear you.
We'll public comments on the committee calendar. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to take the opportunity, the staff, got Chair Ford a card because we know Chair Ford this is going to be his last Water Resources Committee meeting with the agency, and just
wanted to thank Chair Ford for all his work. I mean, I think it's been your insights into certain aspects of the water resources and CEQA thing are priceless to the staff. I think you keep us on our toes with that, and your experience has always been well appreciated. So we got you a card that everybody got a chance to sign, and then there's a little something in there for
maybe coffee or something.
Thank you.
Just want to thank you.
And thank you. Thanks to the staff. They made my job very easy. I'm glad everything's in good hands. Appreciate that. And Chairperson Marks get the same treatment as I
am. Anyway. Keeping us on our toes. That would be something.
Thanks again, everybody, staff. And with that, we are adjourned.
Wait, I want to say a little thank you, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I just want to say thank you as well. It has been a pleasure serving on this committee under your chairship. Very much appreciated, and I wish you joy and wellness in whatever you choose to fill your time with in the near future. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Kat. It has been good. It's been a very good committee, so thank all of you.
Committee will miss you.
Yes.
And with that, the happiest words, item 7, adjourned.
Always have to have the last word.